Welcome to the Weekender. I'm Bruce Kasman. With me this week is Joe Lupton. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Hey, Bruce. Where are you?
I'm in Madrid this afternoon. And just finishing up from our JP Morgan Global Market Macro Conference event in Paris, which I'm not sure we're going to talk about here on the weekend, but certainly was an interesting
event. And somehow
you
ended up in Madrid.
I made a wrong turn in a taxi and I fell asleep. But yeah. Okay, so let's get to the issues. I think we've had an interesting turn here, which is that the dynamics around a number of weeks of central banks providing, I think, comfort that the ECB, European central banks are starting to ease, that the Fed may not be easing anytime soon, but is certainly not considering tightening, has combined with a data flow that doesn't show inflation in a comfortable level, but also doesn't show it accelerating. And that's giving markets quite a bit of reason to feel good about where things are going. Sustainability, I think, is a big issue for markets. And I think, the sense of a sustainable expansion here is something that they're definitely feeling pretty good about. The other thing, of course, is that the data flow has actually been somewhat interesting. The U.S., had weak April survey data, and generally speaking, the May survey data are weak as well. But, we're looking for about 2.25% GDP growth this quarter. We're still looking for, even with a soft retail sales report, a 3% consumption outcome this quarter. Atlanta has still got around 3.5% GDP in its forecast. So there's some sense of, hey, there's a momentum softening here, perhaps, and certainly in the survey data, but not as clear cut in the hard data. And how do we want to kind of assess that as we look at a momentum going forward? And of course, perhaps the most surprising news this week was China, in terms of coming in at the start of the week with a big disappointment on credit, and then having the activity indicators also disappoint. So I guess, there's a conversation we might want to start with, and you can tell me no if you don't want to talk about it, which is last week we titled the Data Watch, the trimming of the tails. And the question is, are we needing to reassess that? Is the data giving us any reason for pause in thinking that we have taken out the downside risk of somebody really faltering in a significant way here as we go through the next 3 or 4 months?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely don't feel like, I felt like this was a pretty good week and confirming that sense of trimming the tails.
You're saying you're taking out the upside of the growth.
I mean, one of the things that I was worried about when we started updating some of our probabilities in the past 4 or 5 weeks or so was a sense of too much of a good thing, right? I mean, we started to look at, hey, there's a ton of resilience here. We're feeling like high for long. Is that we didn't lose, we probably gained conviction in high for long as we moved through the course of the year. But one of the challenges to that was that not only are you getting resilient growth, but you're getting you're getting inflation that's just running too hot. And I think at the same time that we were introducing that high for long soft landing scenario, we were also upping the odds of things are running too darn hot. And I definitely don't want to overstate 1 week here, but you did two things this week. You took out you gave yourself 1 month of downside surprise on inflation. It's still elevated, right? So 0.29 on US core is nothing to, be proud of or declare victory on if you're the Fed. But after 3 months of upside surprises, that certainly moved in the right direction. And it, in a sense, keeps hope alive, right? That shifting from tracking at the start of the year to hoping, I think this is a report that kind of keeps hope alive. That coupled with the idea that you've had some moderation in the growth numbers too. And
but let me jump in here, Joe. I mean, I want to talk about the inflation stuff perhaps a little bit separately, but on the growth stuff, I think if there is a genuine message from data this week that is troubling, it's China. And I guess the question is, we took our GDP forecast down for the second quarter to 3.5. Does it matter? I mean, obviously we're obsessed with the DM central bank path. We're obsessed with the inflation path in terms of getting core inflation back to what central bank targets. Are we supposed to be more worried here that China is going to be quite a bit weaker? And does that matter as we kind of put the global outlook together here?
I don't care at all about China. I mean, that data is just like, I
right.
mean, it's weak. I mean, I've been expecting China to be weak. And yeah, I mean, as we, was it, I guess it was this week, the credit data came in, obviously very.
Credit data came in Monday, over the weekend, yeah.
You had the activity data that came out overnight. That was softer than expected. We lowered our forecast to 3.5. But as you know, Bruce, like I started this year thinking downside in China, and then I was, you know, surprised to the upside on the first quarter. Looked like we'd just say, oh, a sugar high, that, you know, things are going to come off in the second half, and it looks like it's coming a bit earlier. I just don't, you know, if there's a concern on China, it's the fact that they keep producing like mad and not consuming anything domestically, right? So it's all getting exported and raising these tensions, these geopolitical tensions on trade wars. And the US did up some tariffs, although they were like not going to do anything. So I don't know, the beta of China to the rest of the world has never been strong to the developed markets. It's been next to zero in the US, and it's been falling to the rest of the EM. So no, I was surprised to, maybe you're just kind of jumping on the data news because it came out overnight, but I was surprised to hear you say the most important thing this week was the China.
No, I didn't say necessarily the most important, but I said the most clear cut disappointments in data.
It was the news on the US is what, you know, both on the inflation and
but
on
let's the- go to the let's go to the US story then here or yeah. The US and Western Europe. Let me characterize what I'm hearing from you. You don't think China really matters much for the global outlook for the next 6 or 9 months. And it's also right. Interesting to watch how China data is playing out and where commodity prices, particularly metals prices, are.
And by the way, Bruce, let me just add one last thing to the China thing. One of the reasons I'm not concerned is not just its transmission is somewhat muted and more muted than it has been in the past, but you are seeing a policy response. So overnight you got, you know, a yet more policy response. And I think what you're going to see is the kind of use of the public sector balance sheet to try to at least put some type of floor under growth. And I think it's going to be hard, and it's getting increasingly hard. We should remind ourselves that we had three $1 trillion packages announced over the second half of last year, and this is all you're getting for it. That is that's a concern for China. And if you're going to do that again,
let's move on from China, because I don't want to kind of, especially if you're taking the view it doesn't matter, then let's just leave it there on the table. But let me just characterize what I'm hearing from you, and let me kind of just play with this a bit, which is that what you're saying is China doesn't really matter. US survey data doesn't really matter because it's just been such a bad tracker. And the European data, which we don't really have much activity data to draw on, the survey data do matter. And therefore, we're getting a message that we should be fading somewhat of the U.S. disappointment because it's far more concentrated in survey data, and we should be weighing more the European lift because it's far more concentrated in survey data. Is that a reasonable characterization?
That's all fair. I would say I think you're giving a little bit too much of an easy pass to the U.S. because it's not just survey data anymore, right? I mean, it's telling that retail sales were outright soft in April. Manufacturing was outright soft and disappointed in April. And the surveys told us that things were softening in April.
But let's just sort of stop here a second, because the US team still got a 4/10 real consumption gain forecasted for April. And, you know, that's not a soft consumption number. And we got a 3% on the second quarter. So there's a, you know, there
that
still
the
is a sense
print?
That the,
would you say the monthly
well,
print?
Well, no, the monthly print they're anticipating, including service spending that comes out of this report, is a 4/10 month on month real gain in consumption. And that's one of the reasons why you're still tracking about 3 on the quarter for consumers. The
so
IP numbers, as you say, where IP was disappointing, but it's still that had a decent run here, albeit.
I totally agree. I was going to kind of end with that point, which is, I think it's fair to say that you had some soft, hard activity data this week. And that is consistent with the surveys, but the point you just made there about overall consumer spending. And I think when you look at the 3-month run rates, I think you generally had very strong March readings that, maybe you're getting some payback for that. So I'm not concerned about the US, but I also want to just be true to the fact that you had some disappointments in the data. And I would go flip that on its head and say it's a good thing that we did get a little bit of softness, April, because I think things would have probably been running too hot. And so this is why it felt like a Goldilocks week for the US, both in terms of the moderation in inflation, although still too high, and some moderation in the activity data that still keeps growth on track for a solid outcome. So it feels like a pretty good week in that respect.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at our own forecast and thinking that, or even the Fed's forecast, which has GDP supposedly sort of settling somewhere close to 2 this year, you need some cooling in some key components, payrolls, consumer spending, and seems to be what we're getting without any sign at this point of anything untoward, except for a couple of the details in the survey data, which in April did come in quite weak. And that's an interesting segue to the May releases, because we are going to get flash PMIs next week, and we are looking for the euro area numbers to go up more. It will be interesting to see if the US recovers any of that. Although, again, we
Actually,
have.
we're not looking for it. We're actually
Yeah.
looking for a 1-point drop in manufacturing and a 3/10 drop in services.
Yeah. So there you go. And then we get to this issue of it's starting to diverge in a way which is of significance if you're trying to track GDP from the PMI surveys, the all industry one. And obviously, the ISM non-manufacturing was quite weak
I think
last
if
month as
in
well.
terms of the manufacturing PMI implications, I worry more about the global impact of that, because we have been pointing to a pickup in global industry and expressing a certain conviction that there's a turn up in global industry. And while we don't put a ton of weight on the US survey for the US outturns, it will matter for the global indicator. And that is going to take a hit if the US is stepping down a point and call into question the broader global industry turn.
Yeah, but for what it's worth, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think all industry global PMI is tracking about 0.5% above our forecast for Q2 right now. It's tracking basically a sustained 3% GDP growth after having had slightly stronger than that in Q1. So it would
We'll
be,
see after the May survey.
exactly. We'll see when we get there. But let's now segue to inflation and pick up, I think, the point about how to read the inflation numbers. There's no doubt that a 0.292 on core CPI is better than the last 3 months, but a 0.292 is not a good number. So you have to really have a willingness to say, hey, this is a beginning of an unwind of what happened in the first quarter, and we can expect more. And I think that's the question of how you should read this. I guess from my point of view, I think the jury is very much still out in an environment in which, we had another leg down in used auto prices, which I think is about getting close to its end. And I think the environment going forward on goods prices, partly reflected in what we saw in import prices and PPI this week, is towards firming. I think we did get a signal of continued stickiness on the rent of shelter. And the core services have, outside of shelter, have a lot of noisy things in there, but I don't see anything that I would say is decisive in suggesting we're going to make a, I think we had an 8% or so run rate in the first 3 months of the year. That's crazy. That's not going to be sustained. But I think if you're running zero to slightly up on core goods, and you're running somewhere in the low to mid fours on shelter, which would require a decent deceleration, then you got to get other service price inflation below 4%. It's been running, I think, almost twice that the first 3 or 4 months of the year. So you have to have a lot of confidence you're going to get a big step down in that. And I don't want to fight the idea we're going to continue to see some moderation here, but I'm not looking to see core run rates get below 3% in the next 2 or 3 months. I don't know what your
It's
take on
interesting to
things are.
note that, it's easy to get caught up in the weeds on the US pieces, the way you're kind of, rattling off all the line items here. It is the case that if you look across globally and look at the April inflation outturns, core inflation outturns, it's a similar story, which is that April moderated a little bit, still elevated. So I don't want to say things are soft, but moderated pretty broadly. And it moderated in the area that we've been worried about, which is core service sector inflation.
Could I just ask, I haven't had a elevated chance to look at the numbers, but could I just say we had expected core CPI globally ex China and Turkey to move from what had been like a 3.6 first quarter to a 3.2 second quarter. The run rate I think we got in April at 2.26 is very much consistent with that. We had expected to see downshifts after very high readings in both the US and Euro area from March to April. We got that. So I if I'm looking at this, I'm thinking we're basically tracking our sticky high for long story with the idea that there was some front loading of pricing at the beginning of the year, which we shouldn't have extrapolated, and looks like it's coming off. I don't see anything in these numbers that give me any sense that we're surprising to the downside. It looks like tracking.
Yeah, I wasn't even so much getting on, you know, surprising relative expectations, because I think off the bat, your first quarter, you banked 3.7. So it's going to be hard to kind of hit the 3% mark for the first half.
No, but we've got an hour forecast for 3.2 for Q2. That's our forecast. And I think the number you got in April and the mix of the number with the East, with the Euro area coming off pretty significantly in core inflation, and the US coming off of what was crazy high first 3 months of the year, is probably an important part of that that decline. So I haven't broken out the numbers perhaps as carefully as you have, but I don't, looking at it at just the what I see, it seems to me this is a tracking message, not something that's giving me a sense that we might be undershooting what we're forecasting.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just thinking of the emails that have been coming across from the EM side of things, and the emails have generally leaned in the surprising to the downside type emails. Whatever, this isn't worth getting hung up on. The point here is that there's a broad-based sense of moderation in April, but with the big important caveat that it's still elevated, nowhere near kind of where central banks should be comfortable with. And then whether it's above or below what our high for long, high sticky inflation is, I think is kind of third order, but nonetheless important.
Let's go to the big issue, which is on the reaction functions. I mean, I don't really want to dwell on ECB at this point. I think they're on track for easing, and you know, we'll see how they want to message that in terms of.
Well, let me just say one thing on that. What is remarkable, because you had these comments from Schnabel today, that it's like, it's amazing how they are so gung-ho about starting rate cuts, but then in the same breath saying that, well, we don't know how much we can go after that. So the level of precision that they have to say, oh, we know our models are telling us we can cut in June, but we just don't know how much we can cut after that is, I mean, frankly, I mean, can I use
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree on that. It's a bit weird, but nonetheless, they are continuing to pound the drum on going in June. So let's don't fight them. So, but then we get to the Fed, and you know, our U.S. team has continued to hold a July rate cut. I don't think they're holding it with a lot of conviction. I think the big question is, leaving aside so much trying to tie to July or September or November or whatever, what does the Fed need to see here to get them to be comfortable cutting? I guess I'll start with the idea that I think at this point, you know, it's going to be hard for a couple of inflation numbers moderating by themselves to deliver a cut. I think you're going to need to see some further moderation in growth, and probably some disappointment relative to whatever on payrolls and some of the other indicators is embedded in the forecast for the Fed as we move through mid-year. You know, so what is it that you're kind of thinking on that front? How do you see the Fed moving here? And I think the other point, of course, is are they going to finally start to push back against financial market exuberance here? So,
yeah, I mean, I think, well, that's a really important issue, and maybe we can come back to that. But just in terms of what gets them to ease, and you and I were kind of arguing about this before the call, I kind of laid out those sufficiency conditions, which is if you get kind of an underlying run rate, 3 month run rate of core CPI of 2.5% annualized. You know, that will probably make them feel pretty good about that they're on the right path back to two, in which case sufficient to start cutting. If you're running above 3% annualized, that'll be sufficient for them not to cut. And then if you're in between, I think then you really, the labor market, all these things start to come into the mix. And I know that's simplifying, and I can come up with labor market outturns on both of those tails that would change the flavor of it. But I mean, for what it's worth, it seems like we're going to be running between 2.5 and 3, right? I mean, 2.5% annualized, which is a run rate on months of...
I'm not so sure about that, Joe. I mean, the annualized run rate for April was like 3.5. If you're going to get between 2.5 and 3 here, you're going to have a fairly dramatic move down in the run rate. If you get run rates that go 2.9, 2.7, 2.5, you're still running above 3.
I'm just looking at what... I totally agree, Bruce. I'm not saying what if I look at our forecast, we're talking about our forecast, meaning like our house view, we've got, you know, it cores slipping from, you know, 2.9 down to 2.7, down to 2.3, down to 2.2 by July. And that will give you a 3 month run rate of 2.8.
I don't think you get three more inflation reports before July. I think you get two. So you got 2.9. And then you get
you'll be at 3.1 with the June report.
So I think you're talking about needing something for Mike and team's view to come out. You need something more, probably not growth to kind of combine
And as you know, I think as viewers who know, both you and I have been a little bit more hawkish, suggesting the July cut seems a bit underwater here.
But I would actually say this. I think, you know, if you're running high twos on a run rate, which is like, you know, 2.24 on core inflation over the next 3 or 4 months, I still think unless financial markets swing, unless your growth numbers start to give the Fed some pause, I think you got to push the Fed back beyond September on that basis. So I think actually, to my mind, if we're trying to debate July or September, I think you need a growth story to kick in here,
that's the sufficiency conditions, which is in between.
But you said sufficient. Yeah. But I just say that.
And three, which is what you're saying. We're on the same page here, right? Between 2.5 and 3, you're going to need something else, like a labor market that's getting down into the low 100s. That's going to make them feel like, okay, we're not there yet. We're not on the right path on inflation yet, but the slowing in growth is going to get us there. And we can start cutting maybe by September.
So then, I mean, let's just assume we don't get payroll slow to, you know, low 100,000s here. And I'll just sort of feel like we're going to settle here somewhere not too far from, you know, the current level, 175, which is where we were in April. I think that's just the kind of where we're kind of gravitating towards. But who knows? We'll see what we get on that. But if we're in that kind of a world, you know, I just wonder what it takes before the Fed has to actually start changing its tune on how it sees restrictive monetary policy and how it views financial conditions more broadly. Because, you know, I don't think Powell got what he bargained for coming out of the May FOMC meeting in terms of the response of markets. And of course, that has been helped a lot by this sense that you described up front about the economy settling in a world where you've taken out the upside tail on growth, perhaps. But it's also, of course, partly because Powell took out the upside tail on the Fed having to consider rate hikes. So right now we're in a world in which we've put more fuel into the financial conditions space. The Fed has been not recognizing that in its communications hardly at all. I would almost say not at all. And the question is whether that rhetoric has to shift, whether the Fed has to kind of, you know, whether we need to have a Greenspan come to call to moment of irrational exuberance at some point.
Well, right. I mean, it's surprising that Powell wants to take out that upside so much because it does important work for them, right? He doesn't have to say, oh, we're definitely going to hike here or whatever. He just has to keep markets honest, right? And it's honest about something that we all know, right? Of course, the Fed could be in a situation where they need to hike. I mean, you know, things start accelerating here. We start printing, you know, back up to, you know, 250, 300. I mean, there's lots of scenarios. why you would kind of like just cut that tail off, then boost risk markets, and you get a week like this, and risk markets are kind of back up even further, and you're easing financial conditions, you end up kind of short-circuiting the very path you're trying to grease the wheels for. So
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, to me, it's a puzzle. I have to say, this part of the Fed communication, and you're not seeing other
And I was just going to
FOMC
say,
members
it
at
really
this
seems
point.
out.
Well, no, you're not seeing other FOMC members talk push back against Fed. They may be having different views about what they need to do to get rate cuts in the situation. And there are some that have said they don't think you're going to rate cut rates today this year. But you haven't really had anybody I can think of push back hard and say financial conditions are easing in a way that's troubling to them. I mean, if there's someone who's said that, I'd be interested.
Well, yeah, never in that explicit of terms, but I think you have the kind of the hawkish voices still coming out, you know, whether it's kind of Bowman, Mester, Logan,
But the hawkish voices, I would say, are still in the range of the way I would describe Powell's conversation, which is to cut or not to hike. Right. And that's still in that range bound thing. Okay, I think we're gonna have to end here. Is anything if I want to, maybe I'll just end by saying one or two words about the Paris conference, just because and I think it is striking how sanguine people are about the economic outlook in terms of the questions, in terms of the people who spoke. Inflation being too high was not a prominent concern. There was I think, an underlying kind of willingness to see if soft landing paths. There was actually not a concern about the U.S. election. In fact, the polling that we did had a dominant majority of people who not only thought that Trump would win the election, but that Trump winning the election would be a risk-on event. The other thing I would just say is a somewhat counter is that through this sense of macro optimism and optimism that the Fed could be easing this year and continue into 25, the other, more sober view is when asked to write the word that best describes your biggest concern for 2024, 25, and you would expect that someone might say inflation, might say the Fed, might say geopolitics, the word that people most said was war. That is somewhat striking, I think. And I've never seen that, of course, come out in, I don't know how long we've done this conference, but probably close to 20 years now. So anyway, that
The
people are worried
response.
about war, but they've got a very soft landing view about the US and global economy right now.
Yeah, the kind of the sanguine view on a Trump election is interesting, right? Because
But we're not
I don't know.
gonna, I'm gonna cut this here, Joe, because we've gone on too long. I mean, you're opening a really interesting topic, but it's not gonna get done in 30 seconds. So I wanna let people have a little more of their weekend back after we close this
After the
up.
weekend,
So yeah, we'll take this one up sometime in the next few weeks. But in any case, thanks everybody for listening. Hope we can continue the conversation next week on the weekend. Take care.